Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, I thought we'd have a show dealing with a subject that I've done before, but this is different, because the subject I did before was like from 30,000 feet, and we were kind of looking down and getting a very quick and, we'll say, not very detailed understanding of what spiritual service in the afterlife is like. And so I thought tonight we'd get down to earth. Actually, it isn't exactly earth, is it? And we're going to deal with what spiritual service and what the afterlife is like in more detail than I have done in any show. And the reason for that is we have this longer hour and a half. That is really helpful. Thank you very much, BBS Radio. And then also, we have two parts. Tonight and then next week, provided we obviously can manage this. And that will be helpful because if we're going to go into detail, it's going to take a lot longer. But detail is kind of interesting because a lot of people want to know what the afterlife is like. And for people who are listening to this show, I think they may be even additionally interested in what spiritual service is like for those who choose to do that and who are capable of doing so. So this is going to be a very interesting show, I think. And very different from last week, where we were talking about quantum physics for the first half of the show and then other stuff. You know, I mean, in case you haven't noticed, I'm assuming most of you have listened to the show for some time now. And some of you listened to me when I was on KXAM here in Phoenix, broadcast, and also out of Boston. But this, yeah, I mix things up. I like to give a different kind a show week to week so that there is a there's a interest on the part of some people more than others about a certain subject, and that way everybody gets a chance to hear something they're interested in or participate and contact me later if they so choose and whatever. So this is to me the best way to go about it. And so tonight it's spiritual service in the afterlife, part one, including life as it may be so understood. And as usual, I'm going to try to give some basic concepts and definitions so that we really do understand what I'm talking about. But most of the show is going to be much more in-depth. So the concepts are at the very beginning, but then the rest of the show is going to be the details, a lot of things that people usually don't hear about, maybe because most people really don't know this information. For those of you who have read Afterlife Love or parts of the textbook like Life's Hidden Meaning, those people probably will have a better understanding of what I'm talking about tonight, but not necessarily a requirement at any rate. Okay, so let me start off by saying this. After we are done, and we being our soul, using the physical existence to try to co-create with our Creator, try to improve the world of the physical, and attempt to do the most we can within the realm of karma that we inherit from prior personalities' existences, and what we can do in co-service with other souls here in the physical world, we leave. Now, we sometimes leave for the benefit of others more than anything that benefits an individual personality or soul. But we do leave because there's only so much, very limited time that the physical body can actually even exist. Under perfect circumstances, there's the time of 144 years, which, you know, that doesn't mean much to most people. The reality is most people live somewhere in the 70 to 80 year range in this world. And in some countries, people are living into the 90s and 100 years. But generally, that's a very short period of time when we're considering the total life expectancy of this personality that we're in and the vehicles it uses to express itself. In the three lower worlds that the soul is trying to help co-create more of its creator within. So after leaving the physical world, the next place, next stop, is a place called the astral realm or astral subworlds. It's a series of dimensional places that some people, when they die and go to, have considerable mobility in moving from one subplane, one subworld, to another. Those people are generally more spiritual people, and they have more flexibility. It's all dependent upon consciousness and the development, concomitant development of the centers and senses that are in the astral body. That determines how and where someone can travel to in terms of the subdimensionality of the astral world. Of course, we don't have much of that kind of thing in the physical world. It is true some people can leave the physical body and travel in the electromagnetic or etheric part of the physical world, but generally only in one part of it, which is called the fourth etheric subplane. And really, most people can't do that. A few people work on it, and they have out-of-body experiences, and they do that sort of stuff. Majority of people really can't. So that's a limited experience. But that kind of experience changes just by the fact that you give up the physical body. Your consciousness changes in focus onto the astral centers. When consciousness is focused on the astral centers, so is life. And that means you become completely conscious within the astral body. The astral body is just sort of a tag-along body right now for those of you who are physically alive, which is almost everybody listening to the show. And it's just we get our emotional feelings from it. But we can barely sense the actual existence of the body itself. Women are a little better at this than men because it's a feminine body, so they have a more natural tendency to sense it. But even so, most people aren't aware of it because their consciousness is focused in their physical body, and the physical senses are so much stronger than the astral senses that they just completely overwhelm the astral senses. So we have a slight sense of our astral senses, and we call them feelings. Some people call them emotional feelings. Some people call them astral feelings. But it's barely there. But once we enliven these centers by our consciousness being focused in and through them, because the physical body is gone, it's dead, we call it dead, and the consciousness is no longer involved with it, it no longer senses with those older, dense physical senses, and now the astral senses become as strong or stronger to some people in sense than their physical senses used to be. Now, how could it be stronger if the physical senses have so much more of a sense to them while we have them? Well, the reason is this. In the astral world, energy follows thought greater than the thought of the energy itself, much, much more so, thousands of times more so. And so the thought of the person, which is creative imagination, astrally speaking, causes this energy to literally flow through the body at an amazing amount of speed. Well, speed has a lot to do with intensity. And so the results are that the intensity of the sensation can actually be stronger to some people living in some places in the astral world than those people when they were physically alive had. Isn't that interesting? So the change in physics really changes a lot of reality. and it makes it a different kind of experience for all those over on the other side, or most of those over on the other side. The other thing that's really different is you can gain in understanding just by hearing me, is that there's a variety of life experiences that people can have in the astral world. That variety is missing predominantly in the physical world. So we think there's a lot of variety to life in the physical world. In reality, it's pretty much similar. It's pretty homogenized or homogeneous. Whereas in the astral world, each subworld has a very different kind of existence to it. And we're going to find out about that tonight. So that's the interesting thing. And this is because the physics is different. As you change something called the quantum constant, the time factor changes. People live in a dilated time, meaning there's more time relative to the time that we have in this world for people to live in the next. And the more this quantum constant is increased by the numerical value, we'll call it, of the subworld, which has to do with consciousness. As people live in a higher consciousness subworld, they actually live in a greater dilation of time, with energy following thought much greater, and with the senses able to live a lot longer in the body without being damaged. So lifetimes really expand tremendously. Even in the lower subworlds, people live longer than they did while they were physically alive. Not necessarily better, though, because their senses may become damaged by their own selfishness. But if, as we move into the more spiritual realms, into the more, we'll call it, larger dimensional change in this thing called the quantum constant, meaning that energy is much more controlled by thought than not, then those people actually can live for very long periods of time, many, many hundreds of years, beyond 1,000, of our years here in correspondence. But that's to their experience. It's not like compared to and in sync with the years here, just the opposite. Here a year might be 24 years, give or take, as much as that in the astral world. That's a 24 times dilation, and that's at the highest levels of consciousness in what is known as the first or highest level subworld. And I'm using numbers that I'm familiar with. Some people reverse these numbers, so I don't want to confuse you too much. But this first subworld is where the most spiritually conscious people exist, meaning that their focus is mostly out, like a soul would be, as much as 3/4 of the time, by the way, compared to people who live in the world of physicalness, where we are. The average person focuses out, and I don't want to upset you too much, between 1 and 2% of the time here. That's an average person, 1 to 2% of the time. That means their focus, their thoughts aren't about themselves, 1 to 2% of the time in each day that they are awake and conscious. That's a very small amount compared to 75%, up to 75%. And that changes things substantially for those who live in the astral world, much more than it would be true if they were, or while they were, living in the physical world. So their life is considerably different. Actually, I would think a lot of people would say better for those who are more conscious. The astral world could be an amazing place for those who are very high in consciousness, because their ability to do almost anything is amazingly greater. They're much more, we'll say, super being-like, and they can travel almost at will, most of the time, from one subworld to the next, especially if they have this greatest ability to live in a time dilation of about 24 times, where we are right now. And it gives them amazing abilities. But the interesting thing is, you don't get something for nothing, as they say. And for the folks who live in the first astral subworld, they, when they go traveling to other places to serve for others outside of those in the realm of the world they live in, unfortunately, they are giving up a good deal of their life, because in the lower realms, where they serve more often than not, in those realms, the time dilation is much less, so time is going by, unfortunately, amazingly quickly in the realm that they left, and that means that they're missing out. They may return, have been gone for a week, and they may return and found that actually 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks may have gone by since they left. And so that could get very, very confusing. It's difficult, therefore, to maintain an integrity of life outside of spiritual life, because if you're not in service and you're trying to maintain some cohesiveness of relationship with people who aren't traveling with you to the other realms, the problem can be and is relationships are most difficult to keep together, because you're gone for periods of time that seem excessive, especially when people are going away and are out of sync in their travels. So you see what I'm saying. I hope that makes some sense to you, because this is an important concept that I want you to be able to gather, that there's a sacrifice about spiritual service in the afterlife, and it deals with time. For the first time, compared to a physical life, a person has to give up and experience the dilation of time between where they can live and where they choose to usually end up serving. Most interesting. This is so fascinating. But yet people choose to do this because that is the nature of spirit, and is the nature of spiritual service, is to sacrifice, to give up things that are personal for the benefit of the Creator and co-creating with the Creator. Most fascinating. Okay, so let's start with the second astral subplane instead of the first. The first I just touched on just now. But I want to start there. And the reason I want to start there, it is the first place that people, about half the time, not three quarters, about half the time, end up being like their soul, focused out, not focused on themselves. 50% of every day is spent focused out on others by the people who reside and are able to stay consistently in the second subworld if they were to so choose. Now, the interesting part about this particular subworld is that the people there spend at least half or more of their time living in the second subworld. In the beginning, they may spend nearly all their time, beginning being the first couple decades, all their time living in the second subworld. And they think spiritual service is usually related to serving those around them in that world. There's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I don't want you to think, well, I'm condemning them because that's what they want to do, serve. It is restrictive, though. Because, after all, they have great abilities, and they could much more of the time choose to serve in some lower subworld, but they would have to give up that time dilation issue and sacrifice their relationships to some extent, sometimes a considerable extent, in the subworld where they actually, quote-unquote, live, by their escapades, which are really encounters with lower consciousness people, in subworlds below where they live, that are not truly spiritually, we'll say, focused in their life. They may have some spiritual understandings, and they are, in many cases, are more conscious than they were while they were physically alive. But their tendency is to deliberately limit the amount of time they spend in those subworlds because they are more selfish than spiritual a lot of the time. And so this selfishness really comes about and is manifested by them being overly concerned about their inhabitants and the relationships they form with them, and trying to understand God, and trying to, instead of being God and going and creating, spending a lot of time educating themselves and gaining an understanding. And there's a real reason for this. You see, they tend to use the heart chakra a lot more than they do their crown or head chakra, because they're in the second subworld where this particular tendency to understand the Creator is a much greater need on their part. We'll call it desire, and desires are a big part of the astral world, than it is to just go and do and be creative, which would balance out their need to understand. They don't balance very much. They can spend an undue amount of time trying to gain understanding. Consequently, some of their time is spent, and especially in the beginning and middle part of their life in the second subworld, as long as they choose it to be that way, in going to educational institutions that exist there, and in joining in groups that are trying to understand the true nature of God, and in them enjoying that pleasure of life, to really be closer to God through understanding God. But I'll tell you a secret. The only way to truly understand God is not to go to a school and not to be in countless groups that discuss it or helping others try to understand it as well, that you meet along the way, usually new inhabitants that come to live in the second subworld. But it's to actually do so much more that usually involves greater sacrifices, such as serving in the lower subworlds, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But they, the inhabitants, only do that in a limited way. They plan it out many, many times, years ahead of time. And they'll say, well, in this part of my life, I'm going to do a year or two out of the next 20 traveling to the lower subworlds, but no more than that because it'll screw up my ability to relate to everybody that I'm so familiar with in this world. And the closeness that people experience in the second subworld is truly remarkable, because after all, they have this unity of planning and of desiring to understand God, and so they get pretty involved with each other about this subject. They also relish group life much more so than those who live in the first spiritual subworld, and they get very tight in with their quote-unquote group of spiritual friends. Some of them live together, some don't, but they have the ability, we'll say, to be super empathic with all the people that they're very close with, and they use this to an extreme extent. They don't use it as much to help those who may resist them and be ugly towards them and be hostile towards them. But they're living in the second subworld, or in many cases in the lower ones. They keep that kind of at a distance and under well control. This is a kind of, we'll call it, very quantified, very controlled spiritual service. And the reason for it is that planning takes precedence over sacrifice. The second part of God's mind is tremendously exaggerated in comparison to the first, so you have an imbalance. But that's the nature of the astral world, is desires become manifested as life. And these desires are quite strong. People that go to the second astral subworld are people who have usually wanted to be in spiritual groups, wanted to live quote-unquote a spiritual life, but haven't done much when they did do such things. They aren't willing to commit themselves at the highest levels possible, which usually is sacrificing considerable levels of comfort and comradeship and other things. So those are the people who end up in this second subworld, and it's a majority of the people who want to spiritually serve who live in the astral world in general. closeness of people's ties is remarkable. Some of the bonds between people in the second subworld are the strongest ones I've ever experienced or seen. It's really remarkable because there's no way to describe it in any physical sense. I've written this a few times in a few articles and in parts of books I've written, in that it's so different than what we're used to. It isn't like a cult. It doesn't have anything to do with any of the quote-unquote what people call spiritual life in the physical world, because the people really feel a tremendous love for each other, which is genuine, and they are seeking the love of God through the interactions of the love of those they know. And you say, well, what's wrong with that? I mean, that's like all the major religions say that, right? Isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? Well, I mean, it's nothing. It's not so bad. And it's pretty interesting for a while. But there's still this gnawing problem that as people desire to have God's love, they are not participating in that love of God for everything else. And that's the only way you really get God's love, is only by exercising it and using it, by sacrificing and giving to others. So there's a real contradiction in this. But nonetheless, that's what they do. And they do it huge, big time. If you break down all of the discussions that you might encounter, and let's assume we did encounter some, what we would find is that the discussions almost always end with the focus of where God's love is and who's doing the most of it among us and how we feel about it. And it's kind of a sickening, hypocritical type of self-focus. It's the opposite of really being God's love. And this is a big problem. It starts off with people usually upset when they arrive in the second astral subworld, if they went there first and they didn't go to a lower one, which we're going to be talking about in a little while. But when they first arrive, if that's the first place they end up, most people think they're going to someplace called heaven or something like that. Even if they didn't believe in it before, when they get there, they sure do. I mean, they think, oh, this is probably heaven. First of all, I'm alive. I'm not dead. I'm more conscious. I have this great body which can do amazing things. I can travel great distances. Supposedly, I could go to other worlds, subworlds. But, of course, they don't immediately do that. And they're oftentimes lost. The loss is really a misunderstanding. They've been taught things in religions, or they've heard about them, and they try to incorporate these concepts in what the world is about them. That only makes sense. I mean, we are not really taught what really the astral subworld is actually like, so people are going to be mistaken about it, right? I mean, that's all completely understandable. So, and they are. But I'm not condemning them for it. I'm just saying that this is what happens. And so for years, sometimes a decade or longer, people are just plain confused. Like, okay, well, where's the angels? And where is all, but, you know, where is God? And how come nobody said, you know, this is the way you got to live here? Or where's the rules? Which, something, you know, something that provides structure. And there is a lack of that, really. I mean, what people first experience is the contradiction of their own understandings. So if someone goes there and is of a certain religion, the first thing they recognize is that the things that the religion taught them aren't happening the way they're supposed to happen. And so there's a disconnect between their own religious beliefs, if they have them. And not everybody does. It's probably easier for the people who don't have strong, specific beliefs that may not be manifested. Unlike in the lower subworlds where people sometimes get into an imaginative scenario where they actually do experience some of this stuff, these people are conscious enough that they can't really fool themselves into believing that whatever their desires are is truth. They are seeking a more true understanding, and so consequently, the second subworld is seldom plagued by people who are consistently creating fantasies that they live out. That can happen in the lower subworlds, but not in the second. So the people are immediately confronted by their own illusions. But you know what really takes place most often is that some of the people who have been in the subworld for a while will approach those new people who arrive and try to help them to understand, well, you know, yeah, God is all around us, and we can participate in understanding God. You can take courses in the university to understand God and spiritual service and a lot of other things, and metaphysics, which is actually taught in the universities, not like here where basically you can listen to the show, but it's hard to find any good sources. So the important thing is there, it's readily available, and people have tremendous questions. I mean, somebody who just arrives there is just as confused as you might imagine. And they know that the physics have changed around them, but that is even more confusing because nobody told them that was even possible, because physics doesn't teach that in the physical world. So people are a little, you know, disoriented. Can last a few weeks, a few months, or even years. And during this time, they're oftentimes befriended by people who have gotten over all that. And that isn't where they're at anymore. But they are befriended and they're helped. Sometimes they're encouraged to join a group of people who are doing some levels of spiritual service. And sometimes they just enter into discussions with others. And they're always going on in this world. I mean, you can find people doing this almost everywhere. And oftentimes, within a year or two, people are acclimated enough so they start giving up any, we'll say, illusioned religious viewpoints that are in contradiction to the reality of the world that they're in. And they begin then to form bonds and friendships. Those bonds and friendships take out a different meaning than they ever did in physical life, because you can feel what other people can feel immediately. When we say, well, I have a feeling that someone feels this or that here, we barely feel anything. But in the astral world, you feel what the other people are directly feeling, which is a tremendous help in getting close with people. The closeness of relationships is far more than any kind of relationship on an average that people have in the physical world. And people that were even a little distant while they were physically alive because they weren't that astrally adept suddenly become great at it. Could, and some do, in this second subworld. They're still very spiritual people. They were very spiritual while they were physically alive in relative terms. Remember, these are people who half the time or so are focused out. And only 1-2% of the time is the average person focused out in the physical world. So these are people who really have spent a lot of time doing some very virtuous work while they were physically alive. It could have been through a religious organization. It could have been in many different ways that they gave to others. It could be in any number of ways through our civilization. Maybe they were great scientists. Maybe tremendous artists. They gave, and they did so because they wanted to others. They weren't as self-focused as the vast majority of people. But remember, they still have to get over all of the illusion. Because even if they were 50% focused out, that means 50% of the time they were an illusion. And that's a difficult thing, so there's things to work out. Now, the relationships that people have helps, because since they can directly sense and feel what everybody else around them, or most others around them, are feeling, it gives them a leg up almost immediately in being able to overcome illusion. It helps them to understand the things that they are way out of tune with in comparison to their fellow residents. They may form bonds with people which are inordinately strong in comparison to physical life. People become attached in ways that we cannot dream of. I'm not just talking about physical romances or things like that. Of course, it's not physical, we'll call it astral romances. I'm talking about friendships. I'm talking about co-service elements, sometimes limited in certain ways, but still there. And I'm also talking about people who have like an awakening to being more soul-like, and they seek the soul qualities in others rather than the personal qualities. The whole foundation of relationship is predominantly based upon soul qualities than personal. So what they sought as a physical life is almost the antithesis, the opposite of what they seek in relationships in the spiritual subworld, the second spiritual subworld. So this puts everything kind of upside down. And people change fairly radically the structure of their life within years for most, decades for the minority. It's still not much time because you could be living 1,000 years in this subworld. People become intensely involved with the interrelationship and feelings and the co-creation at their level of creation of virtue with those around them. They can't walk past someone who is having a difficult time without getting involved. It's just not going to happen. So everyone is concerned about everyone else at a much, much higher level than what we're used to. And there's no guarding of personal information. Pretty much people know what other people are. How they feel about almost everything is instantly revealed. Yeah, you can still lie in a mental sense about some things, which we'll talk about next week when we talk about the mental world, how that changes too. But that isn't the point. If you really know how other people feel, that's very different than how we live our lives in the physical world. How much do people lie to you about their feeling on a daily basis? Well, it's almost all the time, right? In the astral world, the second astral subworld, it's almost none of the time. So you can see that would change everything for you, right? In terms of how people know you and how you know them, it's a different kind of relationship. It's a tremendously different kind of relationship. Even people who are very close in the physical world don't really know what that's all about until they go and live in the second subworld. Because then you know what real close is. Because there's no such thing as hiding your feelings. You can't. They're right there. And for some people, it's embarrassing. So for some people, it's earth-shaking. Because some people weren't used to that. And it's a difficult thing. Now, if it's a gigantic difference, they couldn't be living for any length of time in the second subworld. Because in order to stay there, you have to be able to normalize yourself to the physics of the environment. And if you're trying to fight it by keeping your feelings hidden, you won't be able to stay conscious. You'll fall asleep if you were to ever even end up for a short time in the second subworld. I hope this stuff is making sense to you, and I hope you're finding it interesting, because I find it interesting. And I've never talked about this at this, we'll call it, microscopic close level before. I haven't had the time, and sometimes I haven't had an audience who would really understand what I'm saying. So these are important things. Anyway, we're going to go ahead and take a break for right now. We'll be back in about 2.5 minutes or so, and I'm going to continue with this. I hope you're finding it interesting, because that's what we're going to be doing the rest of the show. I'm going to get into great detail about this subworld and the first, and then cover a lot of the things that take place in the lower subworlds. So we'll be back in 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about spiritual service in the afterlife. But we're doing this from ground level, from 30,000 feet up, as I've done it a couple times before on other shows and even on other stations. I think this approach is going to make more sense to people. I want it to be more real because some people, especially people who might be listening to the show, are going to experience some of this stuff. And it'd be good if you really had an understanding about it. It might save you, who knows, a few years of your life or something like that in the astral world. Okay, so relationships are so much closer that it's really hard to understand what that means. If you can, and if you can imagine this, let's say you have a best friend. And when you talk to your best friend, most of the time, because you're self-focused, you don't really reveal most of your feelings on any truthful level, and you may not reveal them at all. That's not possible for people living in the second astral subworld because they have a thing called super empathy. And so, ultimately, they know exactly how you feel. They feel your feelings as much as you do, and vice versa, and you can't hide them. If you tried to hide them, you might end up falling asleep and not being able to live in this subworld. So ultimately, that's where people are at. And it's so amazing because if you're in a very, we'll say, involved relationship where there's a lot of different aspects to it, and a lot of people have those kinds of relationships, then you know the other person like you're living their life and your life at the same time. And you may be doing this with upwards of several hundred people at a time. So now I want you to try to follow me because this is going to be, we're going into the Netherlands of the Twilight Zone. So your life now is starting to take on what is known as a soul focus. Now, this is going to be difficult for you to follow, so please try, okay? I'm telling you the truth, but you may not believe me. This is what your experience is going to be like. If you're in the second subworld, it's going to be even more so if you're in the first. But I mean, I'm just going to cover the second. It'd be easier for us to start there, believe me. So you get to the second subworld, and over the next few decades, you form bonds and friendships with people in very deep ways through common service, and usually the service is as much or more in the second subworld than in the lower ones, but nonetheless, and you may occasionally make a foray into the first subworld, but you can't stay there more than a day or two because your level of service isn't great enough. But nonetheless, you have these tremendously close friendships in which you're living, every time you experience any one of your couple hundred close comrades, you experience their life. And you're doing so while you experience your own life. Are you following me? Okay, so now you're living the life of, let's say, 250 people at the same time that you're living your own life. And you're experiencing their life on a feeling level, just like you experience your life. That's called a soul level in astral sense, or an astral soul level of common experience. Souls have more than just the astral, but that's at least we're beginning. That's the beginning place to start living as a soul. So although you may, let's say you have a monogamous lover, well, you don't just have a monogamous lover. Now, this is the part that's going to be hard to understand. You have a relationship as a monogamous lover with all the other monogamous lovers that you are close to and that you have some level of co-service with. So you have the same feelings they all have about their other lovers, but you are monogamous to the one lover that you have. I hope you follow that. I know this sounds like some kind of double talk, but it's not. It's just trying to explain how souls experience life is like trying to talk about how some beings on a planet a thousand light years from here experience life. They have a whole different world of structure and everything. I mean, it's like it's very difficult for us to follow this. But what I'm telling you is the way it really is in experiential terms for people who live in the second subworld. Now, it's a wondrous existence. I don't want you to think it's terrifying or frightening or, oh, my God, I've got to feel what all these people feel. How can I do that? Well, you can. You can because you're becoming soul-like, and souls can. Humans have a very limited capacity to live life. But people who are living their life astrally in the second subworld or higher, or the first, are living a life partly as a soul, about half the time. And so this experience is just remarkable. It's so remarkable that it changes the very nature of a person, as you might expect. It isn't the experience that necessarily changes the nature. It's the interactions. So a lot of people say, well, how is it changing just to feel what 250 people are feeling? Well, it isn't that. It's the interactions that you then create from those feelings, which is tremendous, that now change. You start becoming much wiser, you can imagine. And you start becoming much more open-minded in a mental sense and open-feeling, totally open-feeling in an astral sense. Life becomes, in an odd way, tremendously unisolated, except for the very few people when they first arrive who have fears of all this stuff and can't quite comprehend it, and it confuses them. It frightens them sometimes. You can imagine people who are relatively introverted and quote-unquote astrally, you know, a little restricted, but nonetheless great servers and while they're physically alive, and were very empathic. It's just that they weren't so completely open with their feelings. Being in this environment, it takes some getting used to. And that's, those people have the hardest time. But the amazing thing about this is that it changes people. In a matter of decades, people become much more soul-like. They are more interesting people to be around because they're living this expanded life of all the people that they're interacting with, which is just amazing stuff. And for a visitor, of which I have been on occasion, to this realm, it's like wondrous, but mind-boggling. And the first few times, if someone goes there as an astral traveler, that's a rare event. You can read about some of this, and some of you might have that experience someday. The results are, at first, a little unsettling, to say the least. You can't get there unless you're really prepared to some extent for it. But even if you are pretty much conscious enough to be there, it's still a little shocking to find the level of closeness between people at some super level that we just don't live at in the physical world. And so there's an adjustment, but it's worthwhile, and it's a tremendously amazing experience. Anyone who's been there is extremely seductive, too. You come back to this world, and you feel exceptionally isolated. So there's a negative thing if you astral travel, because it will interfere to some extent with your physical life. Because once you experience it, coming back here is like being in an isolation cell for the rest of your life. You know, you're now confined to some other, much more restrictive reality that you can't live here in the physical world. It's not possible. It's not possible mostly because we don't have a unified series of worlds. So when you're in a separated physical world from the astral, the physics will not support the abilities that people have in the astral world. Now, if you become a member of the next kingdom, yes, you would experience that, but then you wouldn't be a human being anymore, and you'd be much more a living soul, which is a very different experience, of course. And we're not here tonight to talk about that. But nonetheless, I thought I'd anecdotally bring that up. Okay, so have I wowed you yet? I hope so. Okay. What other things are different then? I mean, there's more, as you might expect. People actually can adopt both animals and even very young children in the second subworld. Sometimes they even bring children from the lower subworlds to live in the second subworld. Child has to be pretty conscious, and a lot of time has to be spent with that child while living in the lower subworld to make this happen. It's a great sacrifice to do it. But if it's done, and the same thing is true for pets, by the way, if it's done, the ability to live in a life in which you're so to speak, living vicariously through the growth of another being, another human being or an animal, which many times resembles a human being in the second subworld, is way different than what it means to raise children in the physical world. There, the children grow tremendously faster because they're now relating to these parental figures who are not just the parents, but it's all the couple hundred other people I'm talking about, maybe more. And all those people are sharing their lives with the child instantaneously. The child is gaining all of this tremendous empathy and experience and gaining greater wisdom. So what would you expect? Well, they grow up really fast and amazingly so. I mean, a dog or a cat can become the consciousness of a teenager in a few years to a decade or more of astral time in the second subworld. And they actually choose to change their physical appearance to look like a human being. You can still tell they're not, but still they're treated based upon consciousness and not upon what species they are. And that's another thing that's weird. I mean, everything is like different. But the differences are based, again, upon metaphysical issues that have changed around the people, as well as the consciousness of people. And the fact that you have these things joining together to produce a whole different kind of life. A life which is profound. Okay, and so the children, the real children of people, grow up very quickly. They become amazing people. They have the greatest chance of actually moving on to live in the first subworld. They have the greatest chance to become virtually a full soul while they live in the astral world. Some of them do the most amazing things. And some of them do the greatest level of service. Not the older people that come there, but the youngest. It's so unusual. So you find profundity and wisdom at all levels of age, not to be confused with the physical world, where usually it is kind of true. And as people gain age, they get wiser in the physical world. This is not necessarily true in the astral world. Because of the way you grow exponentially from all the people that you have contact with. It's a fantastic place. What about going to school? Now, I've got to bring up something, because the greatest educational bodies actually exist in the second subworld, not the first. And there, people also grow more quickly. For the same period of time in, say, a course, a person becomes much more, we'll say, embedded within the subject that they're studying and trying to understand. They understand it more thoroughly and how it can be applied in life. They don't necessarily create new understandings. I want you to understand that. That may be done by a few and by some of the quote-unquote professors and teachers that exist here. But that's part of really the educational system in the first subworld. But as far as what it's like there, it's really amazing and how deeply people can understand something and how much they can take away, so to speak, from the learning experience. And so people learn continuously, almost everything. They're ferocious learners. They want to know everything that's going on in lower subworlds and in the physical world as well. And they can learn most of all of those things. The physical world's more difficult. But they can learn a great deal of what's happening everywhere. And they try to keep track as much as they can of the development of humanity in the worlds they can touch. They can reach down to the sixth subworld, and they can sometimes observe things in the seventh. That means the lowest subworlds they can actually get to almost. They can at least serve, most of them serve at least in the sixth and sometimes the seventh. But they don't necessarily choose to go and serve in these lower subworlds because the time dilation is so great that they have to be more sacrificial than they're willing to be. Majority serve in subworlds that are more like the average Earth, physical Earth is. And they don't go down to the places where the really low consciousness people exist because they don't like it. And they're not willing necessarily to want to live their existence among such consciousness of people because the feelings are so discordant. It's very uncomfortable to have the consciousness of someone who exists in a spiritual subworld to go and serve in some of the lowest parts of the astral worlds. And so this is the great sacrifice that they usually are not willing to make very often. Okay, at this point, I'm going to kind of switch gears. You might say, well, heck, let's keep going with this. This sounds cool. Yeah, well, we're going to, you know, we could come back to it. Also, remember that we can have a part three, a part four, if I want. So right now we have part one. We're going to have part two next week. Part two is going to deal more with the monastic existence, but we can always continue on. And let me go to the first subworld and do some comparisons. I could talk a lot more about the second. The second is very interesting. There's a lot of intricacies and things, nuances, that may be anecdotally interesting, but they may not help you grow in your own consciousness. At this point, I'm trying to pick and choose. So let's go to the first. The first subworld, people are able to sense, like a soul, up to about three-quarters of the time. That's a tremendous amount. I'm sure you're not fully a soul, but hey, that's pretty amazing. So three-fourths of the time, you're focused out in service, and only maybe 25% or less of the time are you really thinking about yourself? You're really living much, much more as a soul. And people make different decisions because of that. Some of the decisions they make are to try to, on a more global scale, we'll say, affect the lower subworlds. Get those lower subworlds to function better. The lower being even the second subworld, but mostly it's focused on the third through seventh, the lowest of subworlds of form, not the spiritual ones. And try to get the governments, if they are even in existence, there usually are some form of government, in those lower subworlds. And the educational bodies, the people who are supposedly running things, to become freer in their thinking, more open-minded, more loving, wiser, and to help the inhabitants and themselves to live in ways in which there is truly a soul-like experience, even if it isn't nearly as complete as the spiritual subworlds. They're trying to bring God and virtue into these worlds of semi-darkness. Some of them are dark. And to make them better places. But this is a great sacrifice because they have to go there to do this. You can't do it in a abstentia. And sometimes they will go with those from the second subworld. But these people from the second subworld will stay a day or two, and they may stay for weeks or longer in these lower subworlds, which amounts to months or even years that they lose in time in their own world. That's a great sacrifice because they're very, very close with everyone, just like those in the second subworld. But they have a greater need to create more of God, a much greater need to do that. They're so willing to create more of God everywhere that they can, that they're willing to give up a good deal of their life to do it. They actually live shorter lives. Some of them only live 500 or 600 years, where people can live over 1,000 in the second subworld, because they're eating up their life while they go and serve in the lower subworld. They don't care about them. Lifetime doesn't mean anything to people in the higher subworld to the astral plane. They know they're going to go on and live in the monastic world. They know they're becoming more a soul. It's really not a big deal to them. But from our perspective, it's a pretty big deal. And let me tell you something about what life is like in the first subworld so that we can have that kind of grounded experience that I hope I gave you a little bit of in the second. In the first subworld, people usually don't go directly there from physical life. It's just too hard. They usually end up in the second and then gradually change your consciousness to reach the first. But some people who are the greatest of the great consciousness people in the physical world, when they die, they go to the first astral subworld. They're in the minority that do that. In either case, upon arrival, they don't have the same kind of experiences. The doubts, the contradictions, the illusions are usually not there. As a matter of fact, the world oftentimes is very much the way they expect it to be. Not because they have such great understanding. They usually don't have any better understanding necessarily than the people in the second. It's their desires are very different. They don't desire to be loved by God. They desire to use the love they have for God to serve others. And so this whole thing is like turned around. For people who end up in the first astral subworld, you can't even stay conscious there if you don't have that as part of your consciousness. And this is such a big deal because very few people really understand what I'm saying right now. I understand it. And it's like flipping everything around. When someone no longer wants to be loved by God, but loves God enough to give whatever is needed to help others to grow as souls, they are truly functioning as a soul from right the get-go. And most of the illusion problem is gone, because although they have no better understanding of what that world is like when they get there, they can adjust to it and adapt to it very quickly. And within days or weeks, they can achieve what takes years or longer for people who end up in the second sub-world for the first time. So this is a really different experience, and it provides these people with an impetus to almost immediately join a spiritual group who is doing service in the lower subworlds. And they also are very concerned, as a group usually, about helping all the form parts of existence, including what we call civilization, into becoming enlightened. It's not just about government. I mentioned that earlier because that's one of the first things they usually start with, because it's a big, broad subject. But they get down to the nitty-gritty. How people are using the physics of the subworld to either help themselves or to be selfish. They look into every element of life and try to find some way to make it more enlightening and more virtuous in its use. And based upon the subworld, they have a whole set of ideas and principles coming from usually a group of people, that could be hundreds of people, by the way, who are seeking to find, we'll say, better alternatives for the people at their level of consciousness in the lower subworlds that needs something to help them to get out of the miasma of illusion. And so they constantly are working on trying to help people get out of illusion and then to make the right decisions and to make the right kinds of, take the right kinds of interactions and actions that are very positive. They'll try to convince people not to interfere with the astral creations of others, to not try to impose themselves on the feelings of others, to prevent rapes and terrible things from happening in the very lower parts of the subworlds, and to improve the sense and direction of the way people quote-unquote express love, so it's not so superficial but much deeper. And it's love not to give something for so that you look better, but it's love that actually helps other people to be more loving themselves. These are the sorts of things that they design and try to come up with based upon the physics, which they learn a great deal about, by the way, and the, we'll say, the propensity of wrongful desire on the part of the inhabitants. The educational system is quite different in the astral first subworld. It's participatory. And the inhabitants basically are continually attempting to create new solutions for what can be done in the lower subworlds and also even in their own world to improve the quality of finding and co-creating with God. Everything is based upon a creative factor rather than a more historical learning factor. They learn the physics. We call it metaphysics. They learn the physics, to them it's just physics, of the lower worlds so they can directly use it in service. They aren't learning it in absentia to understand God. They're learning it in practical mode to apply God in ways that still encourage complete freedom and creativity on the part of the other inhabitants in these lower worlds. They don't interfere with will. They learn very, very quickly not to force the others to change, because they know that just invokes more evil, and there is evil in the A sphere, and they're very concerned about it. Even though they can't directly see it, they can see its effects, and it's terrible. So what they do, the A sphere is part of the lowest part of the seven subworld, where the inhabitants are evil, and they've actually created a change in the physics of the environment. It's a weird place. In other words, it's like taking a dimension of time and space and making it your own in a very dark way, away from God. So much so that the inhabitants in the first and second subworlds can't see those that live in the dark. Nobody can see into the A sphere. It's just dark. Can't see anything because they can't sense anything. People in the first subworld can directly sense and see and observe what people are feeling and experiencing in any of the lower subworlds except for the A-sphere. Isn't that amazing? They not only can live the lives of the people that they coexist with, like people who are living in the second subworld, they actually can directly experience what the lives are of numerous people living in lower subworlds. That is just amazing. And then they take that experience from the direct perspective of those people they're going to be serving before they may even directly meet them. And they figure out ways so they can interrelate with them and help them to see the light. I hope you understand what I just said. It's like miraculous. And it's the most creative kind of service we can imagine from our perspective here. Although when we get to the monastic world, you'll see that there are other even more imaginative kinds of service. But the point is that this is so creative, it's so interesting, and it's so almost infinite because there's millions and millions of people we're talking about that they are doing this with. And there aren't that many people living in the first astral subworld. Total population, a few hundred thousand people, dealing with millions and millions of people who are all screwed up and in illusion. Each one of them is experiencing God. And they're trying to be God with it, and without, of course, what God does do, direct interference. They can teach, and they do. They can be an example, and they are. They can show, which is kind of a little different than teaching, because remember, you can still share feelings even with people in the lowest realms. It's kind of disgusting, but you can do it. And so, because you've got to then completely feel what they're feeling at the moment if you're doing it, but this gives them the opportunity to be amazingly creative with beings that are lost and to be an extension of God on a more hands-on level. But they still follow the tenets of God. They will not force their will on others. They will not directly transfer their consciousness to others. It's a weird thing that you can do in the astral world to some extent. They won't do that. Think of it as like a mind meld of sorts. They won't do that. They want others to be free, to completely choose to do what and how they choose to do, even if it's against what they want. They control their desires to such an extent. Now, people in the second subworld are not very good at this. The people in the first subworld control their desires to the point where they are willing to allow people to do terrible things sometimes rather than to force their will. And they have to do this. They have to watch terrible things sometimes take place because, just as God, they don't want to intervene, which will change the relationship between the creator and life to making the life a puppet show, which they will never do. They just don't do it. If they did do it, they wouldn't be able to get back to the first subworld. They could even get stuck in a lower subworld if they started to do terrible things like that, but they don't. These are people, if you want to call it people. They're so soul-like, they just don't do that sort of stuff. Now, granted, they don't have the harsh, terrible feelings that they have to filter through all the physical feelings that people suffer through in the physical world. And they have a better understanding of their astral feelings so that they can see them coming and they can make adjustments, etc. So it's a much easier place to be than if they were physically alive. And while they were physically alive, they had exemplary lives anyway. They still did amazing things, but not to this level. Talk about godlike. People who serve from the first astral subworld are really demigods. They are functioning closer to God than we can ever really completely understand. I can explain it to you more and more, and I will, but it's still, until you actually experienced it, it would not completely come home. What is their personal relationships like, if you can call it that? Well, it's mostly soul relations, but the kind of relationships that people in the first astral subworld have is, by nature, unusual. Now, let me try to explain this. All right, we'll take it into a practical sense. let's say, two people who are quote-unquote married, all right, so they're really close. They have children living in the first subworld with them and pets. Sometimes both accompany one or the other, but they don't stay together necessarily. And you say, well, that's terrible, because what if one goes to the seventh subworld and the other one goes to the third? They're separated by time and space and all this stuff. That completely, you got to remember, they have unique abilities. They can sense the other person dimensions away from each other, unlike the people who live in the second subworld. And so consequently, they don't have the same negative consequences. Yes, they don't have the direct contact, which is very important in the astral world as it is here in the physical world. They don't have the direct contact, but they still live each other's lives together. Let me say that again so that you heard me. They are not living apart. They are living together, even though they are in different dimensions of time and space. One could be in the first subworld, the other one could be in the seventh. It's a huge difference. And the children could be separated, so can the animals, and that they are all experiencing each other every second, well, about three quarters of all seconds, between each other. That's huge. Only one quarter, because they're three quarters of soul. Only one quarter is separated. Now, granted, that leaves some problems, but just imagine, if you can, three quarters of your life being shared directly with anybody. That's huge. This kind of closeness is rare anywhere, right? But in the first astral subworld, this is the way it is. So while they are giving up time, and it's certainly a precious thing, they're not giving up their closeness. They're actually getting closer than anybody on any subplane in the astral world, even though they could be separated by time and space at levels that it's incomprehensible to us. That's the remarkable thing about those who experience this kind of existence. For those of you who have read Afterlife Love, you know a little bit of what I'm talking about, although that book does not fully explain this process. And so you need to realize that spiritual service at the highest levels, while it is sacrificial, is in no way isolating or lonely or terrible. It is the greatest life experience that any human being can have, short of the mental world. The mental world is far greater, and we're going to talk about it next week, but still, this is so remarkable. This is like, wow. You know, and if you think about it, I think most people would gladly give up their physical life to experience this other realm of existence. But by the way, don't ever consider that. Because if you were to selfishly give up your physical life to go, oh, I'm going to the afterworld, I'm going to live in the first world, guess what? You're never going to get there. Because if you do that, you don't go there. And you may have to remedy a lot of the issues inside yourself. I have those moments myself, but I may tell you, you can't cheat the fabric of the universe. You can't cheat God. You can't cheat others. So don't even consider it. The things I'm telling you about can only happen through great service and the natural course of what that service does. It can't happen because you desire it. I'm certainly not telling you about all this so that people can sit and ponder and then wish for an astral life. That's not my purpose at all. Okay, so what about the groups of people? Remember, I just tried to draw your attention to two people who are having a close relationship. But what about groups of people? How does that work out? Well, this is going to be a little hard to understand, but everything I just said about the individuals, it also applies to very large groups, often into the thousands of people, at a level, again, where you're not only experiencing what other people are experiencing, just within one subworld and sometimes a few times once in a while in the lower subworld, but it becomes three quarters of the time everywhere and anywhere that someone is, except for the A sphere, which you can't go to anyway. So basically, everywhere within the astral subworlds, all seven of them, a person can experience anyone and everyone that they are co-serving with in some way, whatever those others are experiencing. And it's in the thousands, because the connections between people are so much greater than that, those of people who serve in the second subworld. Their consciousness is much higher, their goals are much greater, and their willingness to serve and sacrifice is much greater. And so consequently, you could have 3,000-4,000 people at a time living through each other's astral life, and therefore feeling what all the others are feeling. And you might say, gee, how can you ever keep track of that? Well, consciousness has expanded to the point where this can actually be done. I know it sounds impossible. I know you think I'm a nutcase, probably. But I'm telling you, you can really do it. And if you experience some of my life here, you would know. And I'm not going to say anything about me. But it is possible to see proof of this. I know it's hard to believe. Because it sounds so superhuman. It sounds like, well, okay, what would you do with all these feelings, and how could you sort through them so fast? And, well, time becomes, because of the dilation principle, time becomes your friend rather than your enemy when you're using it to create God. And so consequently, you have all the time you need. It's just that everything's working faster in you. And so you can feel the feelings of a 3,000, 4,000 people, what seems like all at the same time. And you can experience what they're experiencing. And you can focus in on any one of them or any hundred of them or all of them by your own choice. As you focus in on a greater number, it homogenizes. But it's still experiencing each one. And you can isolate them if you want and experience one, which gives you a more definitive but much less, more narrow experience, or you can do the reverse and homogenize it and experience the all. It's your choice. And you can do both or neither, depending upon what you choose. If you do neither, you don't focus on anyone, then that's the time you're self-focused, because then you're only focusing on what you're feeling. When your feelings only become part of the homogeny of all the others, then you know you're functioning as a soul, because souls don't identify themselves as being separate. They know themselves to be individuals. They can still know their individuality, but they also collectively can experience at the same time all. We'll talk about souls next week, but I mean, in totality. So I hope this is making some sense to you. I know that it's way out there. Certainly somebody can make a science fiction movie about this, I guess they would call it that anyway, and it would be an interesting movie, to say the least, or maybe a book or whatever, but this is the way it actually is. You don't have to believe me, but this is the way it is. Okay, so what else do people experience from the first sub-world perspective who are doing spiritual service? Well, one of the things that's really remarkable, and this is going to be, again, difficult for some people to understand, is they have direct contact with members of the next kingdom, or kingdoms, actually two, the kingdom of souls, and some people call it the planetary or spiritual kingdom. It doesn't really matter. It's all together. These members of the next kingdom, kingdoms, are in direct contact and communication and are teachers of those that are living in the first spiritual subworld, after they've been there usually for, by their counts, years or so. They don't necessarily have direct experience when they first arrive. Now, that's different than what a lot of people expect, but it's the truth. You might say, well, why don't they have immediate contact with the masters? I thought when I go, if I ever made it to the first subworld, I would meet a master. Well, you meet who you need to meet in order to serve. And meeting a master is not necessary in order to serve at the beginning of your service in the first spiritual sub-realm. Why would you meet a master then? Well, because after a while you start beginning to co-serve with them as junior members. So some of the experience in the first sub-world is not just serving with the humans. It's also serving with the superhumans after a while. Okay, now some of you are going to go, oh, wow, how come that isn't in the books? Look, come on. Most of the stuff I teach on this show are not in books that you're going to find unless I wrote them. The reason for that is that the part of our group's mission is to demystify this stuff so that people can directly understand it without having to spend half a life trying to figure out what some guy wrote 50 or 100 years ago that is so mystical that you could interpret it 10 different ways and it doesn't make a lot of sense. That was good for then. What we're doing is good for now. Okay, so what does it mean to work with members of the next kingdom? Well, I don't have much time left. I'll try to give you a quickie on this. If you're working with members of the next kingdom, you're working on things that are very future-oriented. Usually they're 100 to 200 years out. And it has to do oftentimes with trying to make Earth a sacred planet and trying to keep it from destroying itself. It involves not just humans, but also the lower kingdoms as well, below humans, and corrective issues that are sometimes too difficult for most people to understand. The complexity of it is just too difficult because it interrelates to not just humans but all the kingdoms and what is the plan for Earth. You have to learn the plan for Earth first yourself and figure it out before you can participate in it with the members of the next kingdoms. So if you don't do your work, you don't get into their league. You get in, the ticket for getting in is understanding what they're already doing and trying to find some ways to add to the plan that they're involved in. Or you don't meet them, you don't participate. Okay, I hope that's understandable to the people who are listening. No, it's not some kind of cruel punishment or crazy kind of, you know, well, this is the initiation program. No, it's nothing to do with that. It has to do with your consciousness being at a level where it's going to be worth anybody's time to spend any time with you and to co-serve with you because you are truly co-serving with these great beings and they don't have any time to waste on somebody who isn't able to do that. So the proof that you can do it is in doing it. You have to understand their plan before you can do it. And you can say, well, how am I going to figure out the plan until somebody tells me? Well, guess what? You've got to figure it out through your own service. Your service reveals the plan to you, and then you use that revelation to become connected in consciousness with these beings who then just are there. They're there as soon as you are available to co-serve. Okay? Does it make sense? I hope it does. Okay, guess what? We're out of time. I don't know. I look at the clock. I say, does it really go that fast? Listen, you can get a hold of me at thoughtsofwhylifeis.com email. Try our agelesswisdom.com website if you have any opportunity. We're coming out with a pain formula. I think the name of it now is pain-free. One word, pain-free. That's the name I believe that has been chosen. I'll tell you otherwise. It will be available in approximately 2 or 3 weeks. I think next week we're actually going to start taking some orders on it. It's going to be remarkable. That's all I can tell you. I've already experienced some of it, and it's great stuff. But to make it, it's still a few weeks off. Okay? So we're out of time for right now. Sorry that went so fast. There's a lot more that I could have told you. Next week we'll go into the mental world and anything I thought that we should have talked about in the astral, I'll bring into as best as I can. Well, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.